The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mark Newman from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will share with you information from various medical sources. The People's Pharmacy. Do flu shots make influenza less severe? In most of the news coverage of flu outbreaks, I've seen a recommendation to get a flu shot, even if it's not a good match. The announcer says the vaccine will make your flu symptoms less severe. Is that true? The answer? Public health officials encourage people to get a flu shot, even at this late date. They maintain that it will protect against influenza. Even if it doesn't prevent infection, they claim it will lessen the severity of the illness. Any discussion of the effectiveness of this year's flu vaccine is based on speculation. Actual data won't be available for months. Although in Australia, the shot was only 10% effective against the influenza A H3N2 strain. And that's cited in the New England Journal of Medicine, November 29, 2017. Preliminary results from Canada, which uses the same vaccine as the U.S., also suggest 10% effectiveness against H3N2 among adults. And that's cited in Eurosurveillance, February 2018. No one knows whether this year's flu shot will lessen symptom severity. That data also won't be available for some time. Question. I have taken Zolpidem or Ambien for years, but decided to cut back. Melatonin has been helpful, though not perfect. Does it have side effects I should know about? Answer. Melatonin is a hormone that the brain makes as it is getting ready to gear down for the night. That is why this compound has a reputation as helpful for sleep. Melatonin has been used to help people like you reduce their reliance on benzodiazepine or Z-type sleeping pills such as Zolpidem or Ambien. And that's cited in the European Journal of Pharmacology, September 5, 2015. A randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial showed that melatonin could improve sleep quality in people who have suffered traumatic brain injury. And that's cited in BMC Medicine, January 19, 2018. It also has been used to help cancer patients sleep. And that's cited in Asian Clinical and Experimental Research, October 2013. A Cochrane collaboration review suggests that night shift workers may sleep longer after taking melatonin, and that's cited in the Cochrane Database of Systemic Reviews, August 12, 2014. Melatonin does not appear to trigger serious side effects, although some people report nausea, dizziness, or headaches. You can learn more about melatonin and other approaches to overcoming insomnia in our online resource, Getting a Good Night's Sleep, available at peoplespharmacy.com. From the Wall Street Journal, Your Health by Sumathi Reddy, new findings on ovarian cancer. The cancer may originate in the fallopian tubes, researchers say, suggesting new strategies to prevent and treat a lethal disease. A growing body of evidence suggests that ovarian cancer begins in the fallopian tubes and not the ovaries, giving researchers hope for developing better strategies to prevent and detect the deadly cancer. Among women with cancer, ovarian cancer is the fifth leading cause of death, killing 14,000 American women a year. With no real way to screen for it, it usually isn't diagnosed until it has spread and is in the later stages. Two studies published last fall in the journal Nature Communications focused on high-grade serous ovarian cancer, the most common and serious type. Douglas Levine, director of gynecologic oncology at the Perlmutter Cancer Center at NYU Langone Health in New York City, with co-researchers, examined precursor lesions, which are an abundance of abnormal cells, and the genetic profiles of tumors from 96 women with ovarian cancer. They then took collections of tissue from a separate group of healthy women and looked at their fallopian tube tubes, ovaries, and the lining inside the abdomen. They develop molecular barcodes or signatures to see which tissue the cancerous cells were more genetically similar to. The finding, in almost every case, the cancerous cells were most similar to the fallopian tube tissue. Ovarian cancer really comes from the fallopian tube, says Dr. Levine. Technically, it's fallopian tube cancer, even though we're not going to change the name. About 15% to 20% of ovarian cancers are inherited. Women who test positive for genetic mutations in the BRCA1 and BRCA2 genes have an increased risk of developing ovarian cancer. For such women, because there is no way to screen for ovarian cancer, doctors usually recommend preventive surgery between ages 35 and 40, when a woman has decided to have no more children, or 10 years before the earliest ovarian cancer death in her family. The surgery entails removing the ovaries and fallopian tubes, resulting in premature menopause. Given that the average age of menopause is 52, going through it at 12 or more years early can significantly reduce a woman's quality of life, experts say. Dr. Levine is part of a clinical trial led by researchers from MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston that is comparing the standard treatment, which is removing ovaries and fallopian tubes at the same time, with an experimental treatment, which is removing only the fallopian tubes, followed years later by the ovaries. Karen Liu, Senior Vice President and Chief Clinical Officer at MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston and lead investigator of the clinical trial, said, "Surgical menopause is no walk in the park. It's a much more rapid decrease in estrogen," she says. "That can result in rapid onset of symptoms such as night sweats and hot flashes. Some symptoms can be counteracted with hormone replacement therapy, but many women surveyed have complained of a decrease in sex drive," she says. What our advocates really said was that the quality of life factor that mattered most was the decreased sex drive, says Dr. Liu. Researchers will evaluate several quality of life measures from 270 women in the study, including sex drive and menopausal symptoms. They also are looking at the number of cancers that develop in each group to evaluate the risk of developing cancer. Carla Vicencia, a 41-year-old who lives in New York City, is among trial participants who opted for removal of just her fallopian tubes. She tested positive for the BRCA1 gene mutation after her mother was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. She ended up getting a preventive double mastectomy about 7 years ago. After she turned 40, she started thinking about getting preventive surgery for ovarian cancer. "Initially, I was looking at removing the ovaries, but then as I did research, I saw that the early onset of menopause can cause so many things," Ms. Valencia said. "So I decided to do the fallopian tubes now and give myself some time before I do the ovaries." In the second study in Nature Communications, Victor Velulescu, professor of oncology and co-director of cancer biology at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, with co-researchers examined multiple tumor samples from women with high-grade serous ovarian cancer. They looked at small lesions in the fallopian tube tumors, ovarian cancers, and metastases, which are tumors that have spread. They sequenced the genomes of the tumors from each individual to identify the order in which the lesions arose. They estimate that 7 years elapsed between development of the early fallopian tube lesions and ovarian cancer. Then, within a year, the cancer quickly spread. If we can catch these lesions early, we can intervene before the cancer metastasizes. The researchers are trying to confirm their findings on a larger scale and see if women with other subtypes of ovarian cancer show the same pattern. Britton Trabert, an investigator in the metabolic epidemiology branch of the National Cancer Institute, part of the National Institutes of Health, said evidence of fallopian tube origin of ovarian cancer is compelling, but hasn't been reproduced universally for all kinds of ovarian cancer in all kinds of women. It's definitely looking in that direction. But in terms of getting to the next step and saying you can remove the tubes and not the ovaries, I think that's a stretch, Dr. Trebert said. It's a great hypothesis that will help us to understand a lot about the origins of ovarian cancer, she added. But I don't think it's going to explain everything. New antibiotics unearthed, from the Wall Street Journal, by Robert Lee Hotz. Scientists discover in a soil sample a new group of drugs that can kill resistant bugs. In a bag of backyard dirt, scientists have discovered a powerful new group of antibiotics they say can wipe out many infections in lab and animal tests, including some microbes that are resistant to most traditional antibiotics. Researchers at Rockefeller University in New York reported the discovery of the new antibiotics called malicidins recently in the journal Nature Microbiology. It is the latest in a series of promising antibiotics found through innovative genetic sequencing techniques that allow researchers to screen thousands of soil bacteria that previously couldn't be grown or studied in the laboratory. To identify the new compounds, the Rockefeller researchers sifted through genetic material culled from 1,500 soil samples. We extract DNA directly out of soil samples, said biochemist Sean Brady at Rockefeller's Laboratory for Genetically Encoded Small Molecules, a senior author on the new study. We put it into a bug we can grow easily in the laboratory to see if it can make new molecules, the basis of new antibiotics. The new compounds appear to interfere with the ability of infectious bacteria to build cell walls, a function so basic to cellular life that it seems unlikely that the microbes could evolve in a way to resist it. In lab tests, bacteria were exposed to the experimental antibiotics for 21 days without developing resistance, the scientists said. So far, the new compounds also appear safe and effective in mice, but there are no plans yet to submit them for human testing. It is early days for these compounds, says Dr. Brady. The discovery of antibiotics in the early 20th century transformed modern medicine, but many of them gradually became ineffective as bacteria evolved defenses, often by acquiring protective genes from other, more resistant microorganisms. In the U.S. alone, at least 2 million illnesses and 23,000 deaths can be attributed each year to antibiotic-resistant bacteria, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Worldwide deaths due to untreatable infections are predicted to rise tenfold by 2050. In the quest for new antibiotics, researchers such as Dr. Brady and others are deploying advanced genomics, synthetic biology tools, and a variety of other innovative ways to explore a vast natural reservoir of bacteria that are notoriously difficult to isolate and study, the dark matter of microbiology. In May, researchers led by chemist Dale Boger at the Scripps Research Institute in San Diego created a more potent version of vancomycin, considered an antibiotic of last resort for the most intractable infections. In a soil sample from Italy, researchers at Rutgers University in June unearthed a powerful new antibiotic called pseudo-rhodomycin. Neither, though, is ready for clinical trials. To broaden their search for new therapeutic compounds, Dr. Brady and his Rockefeller colleagues set up an online citizen science project called Drugs from Dirt that solicits soil donations from around the world. The sandy soil that yielded the new malicidin antibiotics was shipped by relatives from the southwestern U.S. I think my parents sent it to me, Dr. Brady said. From the Harvard Health Letter, 5 overlooked symptoms that may signal heart trouble. Chest discomfort is linked to heart attacks, but what about signs of heart failure, valve problems, and irregular heartbeats? Chest pain is not always present in people with heart disease. Instead, other symptoms can be signals that alert you to heart disease. Any symptom that seems to be provoked by exertion and relieved by rest could be heart-related, particularly in people with underlying risk factors such as high cholesterol, high blood pressure, diabetes, tobacco use, a sedentary lifestyle, obesity, and a strong family history of heart disease. Other symptoms besides chest pain may be the clue to a heart problem, says Dr. Randall Zussman, a cardiologist with Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. When any of the following symptoms appear with no obvious reason, pay attention and report them to your doctor. Number 1, fatigue. Fatigue can be caused by many illnesses and by medicines, but a constant new fatigue can also sometimes signal heart failure, a condition in which the heart fails to pump well, or coronary artery disease. It's less common as an indication of coronary artery disease, but it can be, Dr. Zussman says. Number 2, unexplained aches or pains. The blockage of the blood supply to the heart muscle that occurs with coronary artery disease leads to the heart to cry out in pain when it is asked to work harder. However, that pain is not always felt in the chest. Sometimes it's felt in the shoulders, arms, back, jaw, or abdomen. Particularly when pain in these locations occurs with exercise and disappears with rest, the pain could well be a sign of heart disease. Shortness of breath. Don't be too quick to assume shortness of breath is just a matter of being out of shape. Unexplained shortness of breath that occurs with small amounts of activity could indicate heart trouble. If you climb up 5 flights of stairs, I expect you to be short of breath. But if you go up 10 stairs and you're short of breath, that may indicate a heart problem. Number 4, swollen feet or ankles. Leg, ankle, or foot swelling, the kind that leaves an indentation if you press your finger into it, could be a sign of heart failure. It also could be caused by kidney disease, liver failure, eating too much salty food, inefficient blood flow in your legs, or venous insufficiency, or a side effect of some drugs, particularly calcium channel blockers. And finally, number 5, heart palpitations. The term palpitations means a heartbeat that feels irregular or rapid. Most palpitations are harmless. They may be caused by anxiety, caffeine intake, or dehydration. But sometimes palpitations indicate a heart problem. It's important to note how your palpitations feel, how often they occur, and what you're doing when you experience them. For example, if you're resting, like watching television, and your heart suddenly starts beating irregularly or rapidly, bring that to your doctor's attention. Is it a heart attack? Heart attacks may be provoked by exercise, but they can also occur when someone is at rest. Call 911 if one or more of the following symptoms come on suddenly: shortness of breath, pressure or pain in the chest or upper abdomen, dizziness, lightheadedness or fainting, nausea or vomiting, pain or discomfort in one or both arms, the back, the neck, the jaw, the stomach, extreme fatigue. When to report symptoms. It's better to err on the side of caution, especially if you have symptoms that come on with activity and are relieved with rest, several symptoms at a time, such as fatigue and swollen feet, and known heart disease are factors that raise your risk for heart disease, like diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, or smoking. Fitness over 50, rebooting your workout. You may not be aware of physical changes that can make your old workout risky. Try these tips to ease into exercise. Blame it on the job, change, a chronic health issue, or simply a loss of motivation. Whatever took you away from your regular exercise routine has led to a sedentary lifestyle. But don't assume you can jump back into the same exercise regimen you followed when you were younger. Your body has aged and things have changed, says Dr. Claire Saffron Norton, clinical supervisor of rehabilitation services at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. What's different? Age-related physical changes aren't always obvious. We lose muscle mass and strength as we get older, and the muscles become less flexible and less hydrated, says Dr. Saffron Norton. Arthritis weakens joints, and vision changes, neurological disease, joint pain, or problems inside the ear can throw you off balance. Meanwhile, underlying conditions that become more common with age, such as high blood pressure or cardiovascular disease, may put you at risk for severe health consequences if you suddenly start exercising like you did when you were 20. Increased risks. Jumping back into a workout without accounting for physical changes sets you up for injury. Lifting weights that are too heavy or taking an exercise class that's too strenuous often causes trouble, and it's usually a muscle tear or strain. Other risks include rotator cuff tears from arthritic shoulders with bone spurs that can rub on a tendon, falls that result from poor balance and broken bones from the falls, and heart attack or stroke from an intense workout, particularly if you have undiagnosed high blood pressure or heart problems. You might also fail to recognize symptoms of heart disease if you are taking medications that mask them, such as beta blockers. If you are taking a beta blocker and start exercising again, you can't rely on heart rate to determine overexertion. You should stop your workout immediately if you experience any symptoms that can indicate heart disease. A new routine. Before beginning any kind of exercise program, after being sedentary, get the all clear from your doctor, especially if you have heart disease, risk factors for heart disease, or lung problems. Ask if you need to monitor your heart rate during exercise. Once you have the green light, think about which types of exercise routine appeals to you, such as taking a Tai Chi or yoga class, doing a gym or home workout, or going for a brisk daily walk. Make it something you'll want to do so you'll stick with the program. Think of your current abilities as you consider your options. If it's a yoga, cycling, or Tai Chi class, you'll need adequate strength and flexibility. You need to be able to do the basics like raise your arms over your head and lift your legs easily. Then ease into exercise. Start with a low-intensity workout for 20 or 30 minutes. Increase the intensity and length over time. It's the same for working with weights. Try a slight resistance at first and then increase it gradually. The wiser workout. To avoid injury, warm up your muscles before exercising, particularly if you're out of shape. Dr. Saffron Norton recommends 5 minutes of brisk walking or time on an elliptical machine to get blood flowing through the muscles to make them pliable. You'll need to stretch afterward and repeat the whole process 2 or 3 times a week. Don't feel self-conscious if you're not the fittest person in the room, if you need to modify a particular exercise, or if you need to take breaks. Since you're older now, also be wiser about your fitness. Is that dry skin really something more serious? Symptoms of dry skin, eczema, and contact dermatitis and psoriasis can overlap. It's easy to overlook dry skin during the winter when indoor heating and dry air pull moisture from the skin, but sometimes it's tough to tell if dry skin is a consequence of the season or a sign of a serious condition. I see a fair number of people who come in with psoriasis or eczema and had just assumed it was dry skin, says Dr. Jason Frangus, a dermatologist at Brigham and Women's Hospital. Why does skin dry out? It's not just winter conditions that lead to dry skin. It's also a change in our skin's top layer or epidermis. This layer is normally thick with naturally occurring fats and oils that act as a barrier to help retain moisture and prevent irritants from entering the skin. But as we age, the skin thins and we lose some of those fats and oils. This in turn allows the vital moisture to escape from the skin. The skin tends to become dry and cracked. Dry skin in itself is the most common cause of itchy skin. Contact dermatitis. When we scratch dry skin, we disrupt the skin's barrier even more. That leaves us more vulnerable to allergens and irritants. That could cause inflammation, such as fragrances, textile dyes, plants, and rubber or leather additives. When you do come into contact with something that causes a reaction, you'll develop a red, cracked, itchy rash that looks like a condition called eczema. Eczema is another term for atopic dermatitis, a condition that is mostly diagnosed in children. Some kids with eczema have inherited a gene for a defective protein that causes the top layer of the skin not to work as well as it should. A defective skin barrier makes the skin more likely to lose water easily and become dry, cracked, and itchy. In older adults, eczema is a more general term that may describe skin that's chronically dry, cracked, and itchy, and hasn't improved with use of moisturizers. It may appear the same as eczema in children, but it's not caused by an inherited defect in the skin. It's due to age-related skin changes. Psoriasis. Psoriasis causes thick, raised, red, or silvery patches of scaly skin on the elbows, knees, scalp, and trunk. The skin condition isn't nearly as itchy as eczema. Psoriasis is a result of overactive immune system that causes a rapid turnover of skin cells. Instead of the usual month-long cycle of new cells growing in the lower layers and slowly rising to the surface as older ones are shed, the cell cycle takes just days and cells pile up on the surface. It's not something that commonly develops in your 70s. It usually develops in childhood or middle age. But Dr. Fangos points out that some people don't recognize psoriasis for years. Treatment. Dr. Frango says you don't need to go to the doctor to treat a simple case of dry skin. A concerted effort to moisturize the skin throughout the day may be all it takes to get rid of itching and dryness and build up the skin's moisture barrier. When moisturizing alone isn't enough, a trip to the dermatologist may be in order. When we have a patient who moisturizes well but continues to have itchy, dry skin, eczema, or contact dermatitis may be part of the problem, requiring more specific therapy, Dr. Frangus says. Treatment for those conditions typically includes topical steroid creams or ointments to reduce inflammation. Treatment for psoriasis may include topical steroids, ultraviolet light therapy, and prescription drugs that can help to slow the rapid growth of cells or inhibit the immune system. Tips for moisturizing. Moisturizing is the key to protecting skin in our older years. Moisturizers are thick oils that replace fats and oils we lose as we get older, says Dr. Frangus. But he notes that most people don't moisturize often enough, or they use lotions that contain too much water to be effective on very dry skin. Instead of liquid lotion, look for an oil-based cream that's so thick it comes in a jar, not a pump bottle. It should be free of fragrances, dyes, and preservatives. Apply a thick layer of moisturizer immediately after showering or washing your hands, and spend a good amount of time massaging it into the skin. It's tedious and time-consuming, and a lot of people don't like the feeling, but you'll be healthier in the long run if you do it. We have run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mark Newman, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print-impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138 and stay healthy.